From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
There was no silver bullet that could have prevented the 9/11 attacks.
Condoleezza Rice testifies before the 9/11 Commission.
Isn't it a fact, Dr. Rice, that the August 6 PDB warned against possible attacks in this country? And I ask you whether you recall the title of that PDB.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States.
Today, a roundtable discussion. Two former CIA analysts, two FBI whistleblowers who are under gag order, and a 9/11 widow. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice testified in public under oath yesterday before the panel investigating the September 11th attacks. In nearly 3 hours in the witness chair, Dr. Rice stuck to the White House line, insisting there is no, quote, silver bullet that could have prevented 9/11. She defended the Bush administration's approach to terrorism, citing vague intelligence as well as, quote, structural problems with counterterrorism efforts and interagency intelligence sharing. We'll have more on this story in just a few minutes. In Iraq, battles continue to rage across the country as the U.S. seeks to regain control of the country on this first anniversary of the fall of Baghdad. A year ago today, television networks broadcast images of a statue of Saddam Hussein being pulled down in Baghdad. A year later, the war ravages on. Earlier today, a U.S. convoy of military vehicles and fuel tankers came under attack west of Baghdad. Witnesses said 9 people were killed. Members of the Iraqi resistance have taken 3 Japanese hostages and have threatened to burn them alive unless Japan withdraws from Iraq. A Syrian-born Canadian and 2 Palestinians are also being held. Japan has refused to pull its troops, but in Tokyo, at least 600 people rallied in the streets to demand Japanese troops return home. The U.S. announced a ceasefire earlier today in the Sunni stronghold of Fallujah, but it appears the suspension of fighting only lasted 90 minutes, this according to Agence France-Presse. Over the past 5 years, U.S. forces have killed an estimated 300 Iraqis and wounded 400 over the past 5 days. The U.S. had totally sealed off the city and blocked all incoming traffic. Sunnis and Shiites from across Iraq joined together to send aid to Fallujah. But the Arabic newspaper Al Hayat reported the U.S. turned away many aid vehicles carrying food, water, and medicine. Several members of the U.S.-appointed Governing Council criticized the U.S. offensive in Fallujah. Adnan Pachaki said, quote, "These operations were a mass punishment for the people of Fallujah. It was not right to punish all the people of Fallujah, and we consider these operations by the Americans unacceptable and illegal," Pachaki said. Meanwhile, another member of the U.S.-appointed Iraqi Governing Council admitted publicly that the so-called Governing Council essentially had no say in how the U.S. attempted to put down the Iraqi resistance. Thursday also saw same shakeups in the fledgling Iraqi government. Iraq's interior minister, who was in charge of the country's police, was forced to resign, unclear why. But he was in charge of the Iraqi police force, which has been criticized by the United States for abandoning their posts when faced with attacks by the Iraqi resistance. The Minister for Human Rights in Iraq, appointed by the U.S.-appointed Interim Governing Council, has also resigned. The minister said he was leaving his position, quote, "in protest at the practice of the Americans." And in the southern city of Kut, the U.S. retook control of the city from followers of the Shiite leader Sadr. The city fell after Ukrainian troops defending the city abandoned their base on Wednesday. In Afghanistan Thursday, a militia run by powerful warlords seized control of the provincial capital of Maimana, forcing the governor to flee. The Associated Press reports this became the biggest challenge yet to the U.S.-backed president, Hamid Karzai. In Pennsylvania, a federal judge Thursday ordered the release of the Palestinian New York activist Farouk Abdelmouti, who had been jailed since April 2002, even though he had never been charged with a crime. Abdelmouti was a prominent Palestinian activist in New York and could often be heard on Pacifica station WBAI. President Bush's campaign chair, Mark Ratzkakote, visited Florida on Wednesday and spoke about the 2000 election. While many supporters of Al Gore and others remember Florida as the place where the vote was stolen, he sees it a bit differently. He said, quote, "So much happened and there was so much effort by so many people. To us, what happened in Florida was a triumph in democracy. It wasn't a blemish." He went on to say, quote, "Whenever I think of Florida or come back here, it rekindles within me almost a sense of gratitude about the capacity for this country to endure." A Washington state-based company that manufactures and sells bags around the world is in the headlines today. The company, Tom Bin, is now selling bags with an inside label that carries instructions on washing and caring for the bags. Because the bags are sold in Canada, the instructions are also printed in French. The French version, however, contains an additional phrase that translated into English means, "We are sorry that our president is an idiot. We didn't vote for him."
America, how are you? I'm just calling to check in. 'Cause lately you've not been yourself. I think you've forgotten something. Forgotten yourself, forgotten who you are. You become the midnight bully, standing up behind the bar, shoving dollars in your pockets, with bootleggers in the back. You got the cops out in the front room, making sure the decks are stacked. Think that you are winning, but this ain't no poker game. 'Cause you're not looking out the front door to see the ones who curse your name. 'Cause you've stolen and you've plundered in the name of liberty. Sold your soul to the highest bidder, and still you claim that you are free. So I'm calling to remind you there's still a chance for change. Take a deep look inside and see the beauty that remains. America, how are you? I'm just calling to check in. 'Cause lately you've not been yourself. I think I hear you crying. We are America. We are.
Erica Luckett, America, how are you? Here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report, I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And good day to all of our listeners and viewers around the country and those listening in on the internet around the world.
At democracynow.org. Juan, follow-up on your story from Sunday and Monday, the explosive expose in the New York Daily News, and here on Democracy Now!, bringing the soldiers here contaminated with depleted uranium. Can you talk about what you've learned?
Yes. Well, after we reported the results of an investigation the Daily News had done that found that four out of nine members of a National Guard unit, the 442nd Military Police Company of the New York National Guard here, who have come back from Iraq, have tested positive for depleted uranium, and it's created quite a furor over the last few days because many of the soldiers in that company have been saying they've been sick since they were stationed in the town of Samawa in Iraq last summer, and most of the company actually is still in Iraq. Well, actually, they're now in Kuwait. They've just been pulled out, and they're on the way back home. They'll get here later this month. But the reaction to the story has been phenomenal, not only on the political front. Senator Clinton came out with a letter to Secretary Rumsfeld demanding a meeting to talk about what kind of screening is being done for returning soldiers from Iraq. A letter was also sent to Rumsfeld by the New York congressional delegation. Then on Tuesday, Governor Pataki also made a statement saying that he would like to see the soldiers properly tested and by the military. And the soldiers have been so overwhelmed with actually requests for interviews by the press in Japan and England and other places that they're holding a press conference this morning at 11. And I just got a call late yesterday from Senator Chuck Schumer's office. Apparently Senator Schumer doesn't want to be left out. So he will be at the press conference meeting with the soldiers this morning to lend his support to whatever can be done to get to the bottom of these this high percentage of positives for DU.
And what has been the Pentagon's response as this furor grows?
Well, interestingly, they had been refusing to talk to me since last week. The folks at the Pentagon and at Walter Reed, who are in charge of the screening of soldiers, until finally a couple of days ago, they agreed to give me a 10-minute interview with an unnamed senior doctor at Walter Reed, who they would not even identify to me, and I could not use his name. And so I was able to have...
What was the justification?
No justification. That they just told me that I couldn't have the name, but he was a senior doctor at Walter Reed, and I could only speak to him for 10 minutes. So I finally did get to speak to him. He confirmed that they are going to test all soldiers from that company, the 442nd, who request it. Not if you don't request it, you're not going to get it. And that they are going to be having two separate military labs, look at the results of the urine testing. But interestingly enough, MSNBC had a report a few days ago from another soldier, a soldier from another company, who came back from Iraq last June. He was only there for a few months, started getting very ill. He says he's been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. He got a urine test from the at Walter Reed in June. They told him it was negative for DU, but he insisted that he wanted to see the lab report. It took him from last June until this February to finally get a copy of the lab report, and when he did, it had been amended to say that he is positive for DU. So, and he was not wounded, so that means that's another case of inhalation exposure to depleted uranium, that this one actually is confirmed by the military. So that, again, the question is, this was not a combat soldier. He says he was a transport driver who came in with the combat troops in the first days of the invasion, but he was basically a truck driver bringing in fuel supplies. So the question is, if even soldiers who were not directly involved in combat or near tanks are coming up with inhaled depleted uranium exposure, how many more soldiers and how many more civilians, Iraqi civilians, do not also have the same problem?
And so today there's going to be a news conference where?
It's actually in Queens, in the home of one of the soldiers, and at 11 a.m. today.
And so the military says they're going to test all of the men coming home from this unit, but not, as Hillary Rodham Clinton has called for, all of the soldiers coming home
exactly.
from Iraq.
Exactly. And one of the points that Hillary Rodham Clinton has been making is that last May, when she met with Pentagon officials and asked them specifically what kind of screening programs are you going to do for soldiers, especially in relationship to depleted uranium, she was assured that all the soldiers would be screened. But apparently this is not, at least for DU, it's not legally required. And now the military is only saying that they will screen those who indicate that they believe they were exposed and who ask for it. The problem is the only way they get to ask for it is they're given a questionnaire in Germany as they're being demobilized. And one of the questions is, do you think you've been exposed to depleted uranium? Many of the soldiers have never even learned anything about depleted uranium, which is another problem. All the troops were supposed to have gotten video training, seen a video and gotten training on what depleted uranium was, and most of the ones that I've spoken to say they never saw any kind of training.
If you'd like to watch and or hear the expose on Democracy Now, based on Juan Gonzalez's investigation in the New York Daily News of soldiers contaminated with depleted uranium, go to democracynow.org to last Monday's program. You are listening to Democracy Now! As we turn now to our top story. Juan?
Yes, well, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice testified in public and under oath yesterday before the bipartisan panel of former government officials investigating the September 11th attacks. In nearly 3 hours in the witness chair, Rice stuck to the White House line and insisted that there was, quote, no silver bullet that could have prevented 9/11. She defended the Bush administration's approach to terrorism, citing vague intelligence as well as, quote, structural problems with counterterrorism efforts and interagency intelligence sharing. Rice's testimony, which was carried live by the networks, came after weeks of stonewalling by the White House. As part of the deal to have Rice testify, the 9/11 Commission cannot seek public testimony from any more White House officials. In her widely anticipated appearance before the panel, Rice offered no apology for the government's failure to prevent the attacks, as former counterterrorism chief Richard Clark did 2 weeks ago. Clark has blasted Bush for not considering terrorism to be an urgent issue before the September 11th attacks and has accused the president of undermining the war on terror by invading Iraq. When asked to rebut Clark's claim that Bush pressed him to find an Iraq connection to 9/11, Rice said she did not recall such a discussion. She added, quote, I'm quite certain the president never pushed anybody to twist the facts. Rice also maintained that Bush was committed well before 9/11 to a broad approach to eradicating al-Qaeda. She said, quote, he made clear to me that he did not want to respond to al-Qaeda one attack at a time. He told me he was tired of swatting flies.
Some of the most heated exchanges at the hearing concerned a classified briefing memo prepared for the president on August 6, 2001. Rice said the memo, quote, did not warn of attacks inside the United States. It was historical information based on old reporting. The title of the memo, Bin Laden Determined to Attack in the United States. Rice maintained that President Bush, quote, understood the threat and he understood its importance. A joint House-Senate report issued last year found the briefing included, quote, FBI judgments about patterns of activity consistent with preparations for hijackings or other types of attacks, as well as information acquired in May 2001 that indicated a group of bin Laden supporters was planning attacks in the United States with explosives. Incidentally, President Bush received the memo while on a month-long vacation on his ranch in Crawford, Texas. Today, we will spend the hour looking at Condoleezza Rice's testimony with a number of guests, two former CIA analysts, two FBI whistleblowers who are under gag order, and a 9/11 widow. But we're going to begin with the testimony before the commission. This is an interaction that Richard Benveniste had with Dr. Condoleezza Rice.
You acknowledged to us in your interview of February 7, 2004, that Richard Clark told you that al-Qaeda cells were in the United States. Did you tell the president at any time prior to August 6 of the existence of al-Qaeda cells in the United States?
First, let me just make certain.
If you could just answer that question,
first,
because I only have a very limited.
I understand, Commissioner, but it's also important, Commissioner, that I address the other issues that you have raised. So I will do it quickly, but if you'll just give me a moment.
Well, my only question to you is whether you
I understand,
told
Commissioner,
the president.
But I will, if you'll just give me a moment, I will address fully the questions that you've asked. First of all, yes, the August 6th PDB was in response to questions of the president. In that sense, he asked that this be done. It was not a particular threat report. And there was historical information in there about various aspects of al-Qaeda's operations. Dick Clark had told me, I think in a memorandum, I remember it as being only a line or two, that there were al-Qaeda cells in the United States. Now, the question is, what did we need to do about that? And I also understood that was what the FBI was doing, that the FBI was pursuing these al-Qaeda cells. I believe in the August 6th memorandum, it says that there were 70 full field investigations underway of these cells. And so there was no recommendation that we do something about this. The FBI was pursuing it. I really don't remember, Commissioner, whether I discussed this with the President. Remember very well that the President was aware that there were issues inside the United States. He talked to people about this. But I don't remember the al-Qaeda cells as being something that we were told we needed to do something about.
Isn't it a fact, Dr. Rice, that the August 6th PDB warned against possible attacks in this country? And I ask you whether you recall the title of that PDB.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States.
Dr. Condoleezza Rice being questioned by 9/11 Commissioner Richard Benveniste. We'll come back with more of the testimony and more analysis from our guests. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now! That was Ahmad Jamal's Stolen Moment. The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez as we return to a clip of the testimony yesterday of Dr. Condoleezza Rice being questioned by 911 Commissioner Richard Benveniste.
You have indicated here that this was some historical document, and I am asking you whether it is not the case that you learned in the PDB memo of August 6th that the FBI was saying that that it had information suggesting that preparations, not historically, but ongoing, along with these numerous full field investigations against al-Qaeda cells, that preparations were being made consistent with hijackings within the United States.
What the August 6th PDB said, and perhaps I should read it to you.
We would be happy to have it declassified in full at this time, including its title.
I believe, Mr. Benveniste, that you've had access to this PDB.
But we have not had it declassified so that it can be shown publicly,
I believe you've had access to this PDB, exceptional access. But let me address your question.
Nor could we, today, reveal the title of that PDB.
May I address the question, sir? The fact is that this August 6th PDB was in response to the President's questions about whether or not something might happen or something might be planned by al-Qaeda inside the United States. He asked because all of the threat reporting, or the threat reporting that was actionable, was about the threats abroad, not about the United States. This particular PDB had a long section on what bin Laden had wanted to do, speculative much of it, in 97, 98, that he had in fact liked the results of the 1993 bombing. It had a number of discussion of whether or not they might use hijacking to try and free a prisoner who was being held in the United States, Rassam. It reported that the FBI had full field investigations underway, and we checked on the issue of whether or not there was something going on with surveillance of buildings, and we were told, I believe, that the issue was the courthouse in which this might take place. Commissioner, this was not a warning. This was a historical memo prepared by the agency because the president was asking questions about what we knew about the inside. Now,
well, if you are willing to declassify that document, then others can make up their minds about it. Let me ask you a general matter beyond the fact that this memorandum provided information not speculative, but based on intelligence information that bin Laden had threatened to attack the United States and specifically Washington, D.C. There was nothing reassuring, was there, in that PDB?
Certainly not. There was nothing reassuring, but I can also tell you that there was nothing in this memo that suggested that an attack was coming on New York or Washington, D.C. There was nothing in this memo as to time, place, how, or where. This was not a threat report to the president or a threat report to
we
me.
We agree as that as there were no specifics. Let me move on, if I may.
There were no specifics, and in fact, the country had already taken steps through the FAA to warn of potential hijackings. The country had already taken steps through the FBI to task their 56 field offices to increase their activity. The country had taken the steps that it could, given that there was no threat reporting about what might happen inside
the
United
States. We have explored that.
Dr. Condoleezza Rice testifying before the 9/11 Commission, being questioned by Commissioner Richard Benveniste. We're going to turn first to Ray McGovern, who was a CIA analyst for 27 years and was one of the top daily briefers of Vice President George H.W. Bush. As we hear about this PDF, the presidential daily brief, can you respond to what Dr. Rice had to say?
Thanks, Amy. PDB is what we call it, President's Daily Brief. The excerpts that you just played and the whole history of yesterday and what preceded it has the very strong odor of the most accomplished PR machine in White House history. Number one, the president asked for it. This is in response to the president's questions. The president wanted this. Am I the only one that remembers that when George Tenet was testifying formally before the same commission, one of the commissioners, I believe it was Kerry, said, no, wait a second, your own staff has sent to our staff a memo that says, no, it was self-initiated by the CIA. How does that square? And Tenet made believe he was totally confused and promised an answer. What was the answer there? So from the get-go, did the president request this? I doubt it. When he got it, of course, he went off fishing and stayed on vacation for several more weeks. What else? Is there precedent for releasing total PDB items? Of course there is. PDB items have been released in toto under the ones that were sent to President Johnson and others. Why has no one mentioned that? What really strikes me is the incredible discipline being imposed on and being acquiesced in by the commission itself. Keene himself, the head of the commission, has said, well, we don't make the rules. The White House makes the rules, and we have to say pretty please if we want things. And you heard Richard Benveniste say, would you please declassify? Would you please declassify? Well, this morning we have word from Bartlett, the White House communications director, that he hopes that by later today, if all goes well, that maybe they can declassify that PDB item and make it available. Now, you know, what does it take? All it takes is a little black pen to etch out top secret, top and bottom. That's all it takes. Why the delay? Well, the delay clearly so that it wouldn't be available before yesterday. The commission was still operating under strictures, if you will, and you saw them say, well, today we were allowed to say this, today we were allowed to say the title. Well, anybody following this knows that the title was available in May of 2002 in the public press. So there's an air of surrealism here. And the bottom line here is that what we'll get later today is something that Condoleezza Rice can no longer be questioned on in public. Why? Well, because Keene made this deal. If she'd come and testify once, then they wouldn't ask any other White House advisors to come back and testify again. What a rotten deal. And if it's trimmed, if we don't get the full PDB, I guess my profound disappointment is that I can't count on my former colleagues, any of them, any of the folks that worked on the PDB, to come forward and say, look, you know, you're missing two paragraphs. And that, you know, there have been people in Britain, there are people in Australia, even in Denmark, who have come forward and said, yeah, there's a pack of lies. Yeah, it's still classified, but I'm a patriot. I'm going to tell my fellow countrymen it's a pack of lies. Here in this country, we have not observed that. And as I say, for intelligence professionals in retirement and people who know what the stakes are, this is a profound disappointment.
And, of course, if it follows the normal pattern in the Bush administration, the release will occur at about 4:30 or 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon for the worst news cycle of all, which is the Saturday news cycle. Mm-hmm. But we'd like to also bring into the discussion Monica Gabriel, the wife of Richard Gabriel, who was killed in September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center. She's the co-chair of the Skyscraper Safety Campaign and a member of the Coalition of 911 Families and of 911 Families for a Secure America. She was there yesterday at the hearings. Your response to, especially the astounding revelation that the presidential daily briefing talked about 70 sleeper cells of Al-Qaeda in the United States.
Yeah, I'd also like to add that I'm part of the Family Steering Committee for the 9/11 Commission as well. I was astounded to hear the sleeper cells and the lack of concern of this administration to follow the information that was provided in there and find these sleeper cells and do what they could, that there was not a level of concern. And let's remember that the intelligence works not as an invitation to come to a party. You don't get time, date, and place. What you get is bits of pieces of information that the analysts then have to put together. There were many warnings. There were many dots. What happened was there was a failure to connect the dots, and there was certainly a failure of prioritizing in this administration prior to 9/11.
Were you surprised by anything you heard Dr. Condoleezza Rice say? I mean, it is your group that basically is the reason this 9/11 commission exists.
No, I think mostly it was a rehash of the Sunday talk shows. It was a non-answers for a lot of things until she was put on the hot seat by Benveniste and Romer and Kerry. And she was still able to not answer. For someone who was able to repeat verbatim documents and speeches, to suddenly not recall whether she spoke to the president about sleeper cells, I find a little disingenuous.
I wanted to ask Mel Goodman a question, former CIA and State Department analyst for decades. You have looked at or heard the staff reports from the 9/11 Commission. The way it was presented on the news yesterday after the testimony was he said, she said. Richard Clark, Condoleezza Rice, Richard Clark, Condoleezza Rice. You know, believe one or believe the other. Is that the way to analyze this?
No, it isn't. And the best way is to go to the baseline. And the baseline here is the staff studies of the commission, which were released on March the 24th, but lost in the shuffle because that's the same day that Dick Clark testified. The staff studies make it clear that there was reduced urgency within the Bush administration. We have that from the deputy director of CIA. We have that from Undersecretary of State Armitage. We have it from the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Shelton. And they show point by point that it was the Bush administration that wanted to reduce the use of cruise missiles. This is apparently what Bush meant by, I'm not going to be swatting at flies. It was the Bush administration that wanted to reduce our relationships, the CIA relationships, with the Northern Alliance under Massoud. Remember, that was the key to overthrowing the Taliban government, not the American military presence. They wanted to reduce the military options. They wanted to reduce the CIA renderings, which numbered about 70, that is, the CIA capturing or kidnapping al-Qaeda officials and turning them over to other countries. But now what Condi Rice has done with what I consider a very ineffective piece of testimony is open up a new line of questioning, because yesterday she said something incredible that no one has picked up on. She said that the Bush administration is responsible for the greatest reorganization of government since the 1947 National Security Act. Now, that is really nonsense. What we learned from 9/11 is that there was a failure to have a central repository for domestic and international intelligence. Now, in creating the Department of Homeland Security, the one thing that department doesn't have is any central repository, because Tenet and Mueller went to the president and made sure that they were not given this capability because the FBI and the CIA want to continue to do business as usual, which they're doing. They've formed their what they call TTAC, the Terrorist Threat Integration Center, which is no different than the Counterterrorism Center that existed at the CIA, which was responsible in part for the intelligence failure of 9/11. One final point. I think Condi Rice has opened up a real issue of dereliction of duty here. Remember during the Millennium Scare in the winter of 1999, the year 2000, the public was given a great deal of information as reports were continuing to come in. There was a real surge of reporting about what might happen, the Y2K problem and the New Year's Eve problem. The public had so much information, it could make decisions about would it travel, should it stockpile water in homes, this kind of thing. Well, in April, May, and June of 2001, there was another increase in reporting that was not shared with the public at all. This allowed Attorney General Ashcroft to stop flying on commercial aircraft. And I guess the question I would ask to someone like Condi Rice, do you think that people in that second tower, the second World Trade Center tower, would have just stood at the windows when the first tower was hit and watched the chaos that ensued after that attack? Or would they have gotten out of that tower immediately if they knew about all the warnings that the government was getting in April, May, and June that the Bush administration seemed to be having no concern about? And finally, with regard to the staff studies document the lack of interest of Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld on the issue of terrorism. He was obsessed with deployment of his national missile defense. His lack of urgency was so bad that on the day he came into office, the day of the inauguration, his assistant secretary for counterterrorism, the key official for counterterrorism, resigned that day. He was not replaced until after September the 11th. So that's another issue of dereliction of duty. So I think the testimony not only has confirmed Dick Clark's testimony from 2 weeks ago, but it's opened up whole new areas of questioning that Condi Rice has now created.
Mel Goodman, former CIA analyst, now has come out with a new book this week with Craig Eisendrath called Bush League Diplomacy, How the Neoconservatives Are Putting the World at Risk. As we turn to a clip of the testimony of Dr. Condoleezza Rice being questioned by Commissioner Jamie Gorelick.
First of all, while it may be that Dick Clark was informing you, many of the other people at the CSG level and the people who were brought to the table from the domestic agencies were not telling their principals. Secretary Mineta, the Secretary of Transportation, had no idea of the threat. The administrator of the FAA, responsible for security on our airlines, had no idea. Yes, the Attorney General was briefed, but there is no evidence of any activity by him about this. You indicate in your statement that the FBI tasked its field offices to find out what was going on out there. We have no record of that. The Washington field office, international terrorism people say they never heard about the threat. They never heard about the warnings. They were not asked to come to the table and shake those trees. SACs, special agents in charge around the country, Miami in particular, no knowledge of this. And so I really come back to you. Let me add one other thing. Have you actually looked at the NLETs, the messages that the FBI put out?
Yes.
To me, and you're free to comment on them, they are feckless. They don't tell anybody anything. They don't bring anyone to battle stations. And I personally believe, having heard Colleen Rowley's testimony about her frustrations in the Massawi incident, that if someone had really gone out to the agents who are working these issues on the ground and said, we are at battle stations, we need to know what's happening out there, come to us, she would have broken through barriers to have that happen, because she was knocking on doors and they weren't opening.
9/11 Commissioner Jamie Gorella questioning Dr. Condoleezza Rice. When we come back, we will be joined by Colleen Rowley. She wrote the memo to the FBI director, Robert Mueller, accusing FBI headquarters of hampering the investigation into the alleged 20th hijacker, Zacharias Moussaoui. She says officials at FBI headquarters resisted seeking search warrants and admonished agents who sought help from the CIA. We'll see how she responds to Dr. Condoleezza Rice's testimony. We'll also be speaking with Sybil Edmonds, the former FBI translator who was hired shortly after 9/11 to translate intelligence gathered previous to the attacks and the wiretaps she translated and how that compares to what Dr. Condoleezza Rice said the administration knew. Stay with us. Angelique Cadjot here on Democracy Now!, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez as we continue with the analysis of the testimony of Dr. Condoleezza Rice before the 9/11 Commission.
And we're joined on the telephone by Colleen Rowley, who wrote the 13-page letter to FBI Director Robert Mueller accusing FBI headquarters of hampering the investigation into the alleged 20th hijacker of September 11th. Welcome to Democracy Now! Your reaction, especially to the revelations in the testimony yesterday that the FBI was actively pursuing 70 sleeper cells in the United States of Al-Qaeda?
Well, let me preface anything I say. I've been instructed not to talk to the media, and that's actually surprising since the letter that I wrote initially is supposedly got whistleblower protection. But I think the FBI now is in a very precarious position because of the fact that there's threats to split the FBI up, and therefore the hierarchy is very sensitive to saying anything or even to allowing people to talk. But so today I'm speaking only in my personal capacity, and I'm trying to speak only from what I've said before, which is on the 13-page letter, and which in theory has whistleblower protection. But obviously, if you read, or anyone rereads that letter, which is now kind of ancient history, you will see a remarkable denial on the part of the mid-level management people at headquarters that any Al-Qaeda operative could be existing here in the United States. And, of course, the comments that were made, which I'm aware of, do not display that there was any urgency on the part of these people to react to news that was being generated from the field offices.
Now, yesterday, Dr. Condoleezza Rice said that all of the field offices knew about the potential threats. What did you understand at the time, Colleen Rowley?
Well, you know, historically, the FBI had been investigating Al-Qaeda for a long time. Obviously, the first 1993 World Trade Center attacks brought that into focus. So Al-Qaeda certainly was considered a threat. But what I'm talking about is any special urgency, especially during the summer of 2001, which would have made people, especially the mid-level management people, more aware of information, little pieces of information that were generated to them. And again, if you reread the letter and the fact that the Phoenix memo and the information that came in from our office and other offices simply was not acted on.
I just want to interrupt for 1 second. On August 15th, Zacharias Moussaoui was taken into custody, to refresh people's memories, 3 weeks before the September 11th attacks. So at that point, when the alleged 20th hijacker is taken into custody, at a point when, well, certainly if information was gathered and if, in fact, he was a part of this and you could get information, perhaps the September 11th attacks could have been averted. Can you talk about what you understood the threat level to be and if you understood how high the people in Washington, how seriously they were treating things at this point?
Well, I don't have any firsthand information about what the threat level was and the people in Washington, other than what the comments and the responses that were given from these people to our field office agents here. And again, if you reread the testimony, even from the Joint Intelligence Committee, of responses that were given, it does not show that there was any understanding of the urgency of the threat.
We're also joined on the phone by Sybil Edmonds, a former FBI translator who was hired shortly after September 11th to translate intelligence gathered over the previous attacks. And she speaks fluent Farsi, Arabic, and Turkish. And welcome to Democracy Now!
Good morning. Thank you for having me back. And let me make a correction. I don't speak Arabic. I do speak Farsi, Turkish, and Azerbaijani, just on the side.
Okay. Thank you for that correction. Yeah. Now, your reaction as you listen to the National Security Advisor, Condoleezza Rice, yesterday, in terms of your knowledge of the material that you were hired to translate?
Well, some good questions were asked. However, many questions were not asked, and some questions remained unanswered. I would like to point out to one correction that Ms. Rice made during this hearing. 2 weeks ago, I made a statement saying that Ms. Rice's statement that we did not have any specific information was an outrageous lie. Ms. Rice corrected herself yesterday by saying, I should have said I personally was not aware rather than we. And I think that's a very important piece that not many people has picked up on. And who else is left after she herself removed herself from this statement? Who is she referring when she says we? And now it's like I am not and I was not aware of this specific information. And so that was not answered, and there was no question basically following up on that. And then another thing that she referred about breaking down the walls between counterterrorism, counterintelligence, and criminal investigations, and she's not mentioning the walls that the administration, these people themselves create, and what has been glossed over so far under the name of diplomatic relations. And how many investigations were not pursued despite the warning just due to the diplomatic relations that they are referring to. And that leaves me very skeptical, and I don't know who's going to answer these questions.
Colleen Rowley, did you understand that planes could be used at this point? Zacharias Moussaoui is in custody. He's learning how to use a plane. You have serious questions about him, but you can't even look at his hard drive.
Of course, this was agents in my office who were doing the investigations, not me personally. But one of our agents actually spoke with somebody at headquarters and suggested that this would be a type of person who could fly a plane into the World Trade Center. And at that time was met with a remark, something like, that ain't gonna happen, which again just displays the lack of understanding on the part of the people at headquarters.
Met with the remark by who?
By an FBI supervisor.
In your office?
No, at headquarters.
In Washington?
Yes.
What higher up? What supervisor?
Well, I'm not going to name names, but, you know, these were mid-level management people that when you make a request from a field office, you have to have their okay and approval to even take it a step further. And these people, I don't think, were fully aware of the urgency and the threat that summer.
When did this happen?
This happened in August. The first request was made around August 22nd.
Mel Goodman, to get back to you, the former CIA and State Department analyst, as you listened to the testimony yesterday, and of course, Security Advisor, National Security Advisor Rice several times referred to the August 6th presidential briefing as basically a historical document. But what you know of the information that was in there, what we've been able to glean from months of discussion around it without the actual paper being released yet, what is your sense of whether that was a historical document or not?
Well, it was clearly a review document, but it had current emphasis and current interest. The title of the piece, as you said earlier, was Bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside the United States. This in itself should have attracted a good deal of attention. And then it went into FBI reporting, which was very sensitive at the time, noting that there were increased indicators of hijackings that could take place in the United States, again, inside the United States, and that there were increased indicators of infiltration from Canada of al-Qaeda terrorists with explosives. Now, the last time I looked, Canada was on the United States border, so I don't know how Condi Rice cannot see the sensitivity of such reporting. And let me add one thing about the job of the National Security Advisor. The National Security Advisor was created to do two things above all else. One, to make sure all relevant information and options got in front of the president, which he clearly didn't do with regard to al-Qaeda cells operating in the United States. And two, to make sure if the president wants something done, that it's indeed carried out. That's the vetting job that she has. And she said several times during the testimony that the assumption was there was an FBI director and he carried out the jobs given to the FBI, so on and so forth. But we know now that there was a lot that wasn't done at the FBI. We know that the Transportation Secretary Mineta did not even know about the increased urgency. We know that the FAA didn't get reporting, and there was no oversight responsibility by the National Security Advisor. So on that level, she wasn't doing her job.
Colleen Rowley, what was the reaction in your office on the morning of September 11th when the planes hit the World Trade Centers and then when the plane hit the Pentagon?
Unfortunately, within really probably just seconds or minutes of seeing the news, we realized that this connected with the matter in Minneapolis and began then to seek the criminal way of getting a search warrant.
Was there an understanding that this was a terrorist attack?
Very quickly from the first footage, I think there was a quick understanding that this was not only a terrorist attack, but probably the al-Qaeda was responsible for it. Can I add something just about the nature of prevention of terrorism? I think that there's a misunderstanding that that you have to have a silver bullet to prevent things like this. And just as a series of mistakes can lead to a tragedy, and it's not just one thing, it can be a multitude of things, it's also a multitude of things that can lead to prevention. And in many cases, a tragedy might be diminished simply because of a little bit of luck, along with other things. And if we're to have this attitude that we have to have a silver bullet to prevent things, we will really be in sorry shape in the future.
I want to just add, Colleen Rowley was named Time Person of the Year in 2002 for speaking out as a whistleblower in the FBI.
We'd like to get back to Monica Gabriel right here in the studio with us. And your reaction, I see you nodding your head several times, especially when Mel Goodman and Colleen Rowley were speaking, in terms of your assessment from the perspective of some of the families of how this investigation is unfolding and whether the commission is doing the job it should be doing and in terms of getting to the bottom of these matters.
First of all, I think the commission is, it's it's been stonewalled and foot dragging for most of the time. We are now coming into, you know, the final stretch, so to speak, and with all the information that's suddenly been brought forth, the whistleblowers that are coming forth, I fear that there is not going to be enough time to follow the investigation of, you know, the information that they're getting now.
This is a report that's called an independent commission. Mm-hmm. What's your reaction to the news that the White House plans to vet the 9/11 commission report, possibly delaying the release till maybe even after the election?
Yeah, we have heard of that, and we figured that it would probably have to go through a vetting process because of the sensitive material. If you recall, the Family Steering Committee wanted to take this commission and its work out of the election cycle, and we proposed a January final date. I think that would have, you know, eliminated this problem. What we want is a transparent, full report of the failures. And because of the limitations set by the White House, because of their refusal to cooperate and stonewall, what we have now is a commission that's under crunch time. And I fear that perhaps we won't get all the answers through this commission. And quite honestly, the fact that Condi Rice, as National Security Advisor, continues to maintain they didn't know or couldn't have known is just unconscionable. There were warnings out there. There were, you know, outside of a specific date, time, and place, there was plenty of material out there that if they had just paid attention or if she had done her job and put people on alert in August, the FAA would have been notified, the Port Authority would have been notified, the City of New York would have been notified. New York City was a clear target after 93. The people in Tower 2, my husband, should have had the opportunity to decide whether it was time to run or whether there was not a reason to get out of those buildings. And instead, they heard, you know, claims that everything was fine, everything was safe, and they took their time getting out. And I think it's unconscionable, and I think we need to revisit probably the job description of the National Security Advisor and take a look at what she did or didn't do in those months prior to September 11th in filtering information that was critical. When you have a PDB that is titled Bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside the U.S., and you have chatter that says the big thing is coming, you're going to get hit, you know there are sleeper cells, that you don't take that very seriously and protect the cities, the big cities like New York and Washington and L.A., I find it just unconscionable.
August 6, 2001, when Bush received that report, once again on that month-long vacation at Crawford, Texas, do you think this could have been averted?
I from everything that's coming out, I feel that we can never be 100% sure, but I firmly believe that the destruction and death could have been minimized.
I want to thank you all very much for being with us. We've been joined by Monica Gabrielle, lost her husband Richard Gabrielle at the World Trade Center September 11th. Colleen Rowley, who is the FBI whistleblower, who said officials at FBI headquarters hampered the investigation into the alleged 20th hijacker, Zacharias Moussaoui, caught 3 weeks before the attacks. Sybil Edmonds, former FBI translator, who spoke out. Melvin Goodman and Ray McGovern, formerly CIA analysts for decades, as we wrap up this discussion of the testimony of Dr. Condoleezza Rice next week, the 911 Commission continues. That does it for the show. We look forward to seeing folks on Tuesday night at a WBAI benefit in New York at Cooper Union. Juan will be there, Tim Robbins, Bernard White, my brother David Goodman, who co-authored the new book with me, The Exception to the Laws, Exposing Oily Politicians, War Profiteers, and the Media Love Them, Cooper Union, Astor Place. Check our website. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkshire, Fabio Kudus, Anna Nagar, Elizabeth Press, John Hamilton, Jeremy Scahill, Mike DeFilippo, our engineer. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.